On this episode of the podcast, I've got my good buddy Forrest Young at I Know Forrest on Instagram and TikTok. Forrest is a guy I had on the podcast several years ago where he talked about, as a gym owner, he went through some ups and downs of business, some real low lows, self-medicated with mushrooms, came out of that thing, you know, doing better in business, life is good. Then he came back on the podcast a few years later, talked about how, you know, during COVID, he really kind of found his stride in creating content and developed a personal brand for himself and started monetizing it. And now I've got him back on the podcast again to talk about how he's gone about and evolved the monetization of his personal brand, was able to sell his gym, and now he's got these really cool real estate goals out in the Pacific Northwest. Forrest is just a dude that I enjoy. He makes funny and educational content on social media. He's a guy I've never met in person, but through the amazing thing that is social media and the internet, I feel like I know him really well. I hope you guys enjoy this conversation and go check him out at I Know Forrest on all social media platforms. What is up, guys? It is Stu, and it's another episode of the What the Fuck Gym Talk podcast. I've got returning again, my man Forrest. I know at I Know Forrest. Went from episode one, you came on. Life was tough. Mushrooms made life better. Business got better. Life, you know, life in general got better. You were venturing. We talked about content. Second time you came on, you were like, you know, whatever, 30,000 followers. You had like blown up from whatever you were to maybe in the 30,000 realm with the content you were creating. We went back and forth on content creation conversation. And now, yeah, man, I'm glad we got the chance to reconnect. But just to answer this, before we hit record, kids, Forrest was asking me about the micro gym industry. And what I was texting. So the big thing right now, if you know Exponential, big umbrella brand, they own 10. They're the largest privately, well, they're not private, but the largest publicly owned company of studios in the globally. They own 10 different brands like Rumble.
Oh, yeah, I do.
Club Pilates, Stretch Lab. They own all those.
And they're like, they're acquiring more, right?
Yeah. So they grow like crazy. But if you're in the industry, you know, there's like three brands there that are really making them all the money. The rest of them are kind of duds. And there's a holdings company that has gone ahead and acquired like 70 to 80 different Exponential type studios. Some of them are Y6 Yoga. Some of them are Cycle Bars. Some of them are whatever. And essentially the rumor is that Exponential essentially set up a faulty holding company, selling these failing studios to this holdings company just to get them off their books so they don't have to report the losses. And gotcha. If you get it, you go down the rabbit hole of Reddit, you're hearing these crazy fucking stories of like studios just getting shut down, no one getting paid, no one, members and staff aren't getting notified. So to answer your question, how is the micro gym industry? As usual, full of fuckery.
Yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. Man. It seems like it's getting more and more chaotic.
Yeah. It's just because, you know, it's sophisticated enough that there's some brands that have enough money in it now to insulate themselves even from sucking. Even when they suck, they can still sell another six. Rumble is a failure. Yeah. That product, in my opinion, is failing from everything I've seen, heard, and witnessed. Yet they're going to sell another 200 of those units by Q2 of next year. And it's, it's kind of like F45. Have you seen F45 lied when they went to their IPO?
Yes.
And now they're going to be in tons of fucking trouble going forward. Maybe people go to jail.
Yeah, dude. They start all these fucking gyms, all these franchise gyms start in this area, right? In like LA, they'll go Santa Monica, Venice. They'll come down to the beach cities. There's a little bit more money here. And then they'll launch their second flagship store and then they'll franchise out. And so F45, Australian brand, right? And then FitStop is the next one. Have you heard of FitStop?
Yep.
So FitStop is the next one, right? And they went to Santa Monica. Now they're in Hermosa. It's literally F45 with barbells now. It's exactly like CrossFit, but a little bit more bougie.
Yeah.
And they're going to do the same exact model. 2 or 3 years, they'll cash out and they'll be out. Done. They'll oversell it.
Yeah. I blame it. Like there's just so much dumb money out there that'll write checks.
Yeah.
So much dumb money. And, you know, it's like, wait, isn't it the same thing as that, but with different colored lights? Like if you really took the time to like look at it. So anyway, as long as people keep writing checks, these things will keep growing. And there are some good franchise models out there that I like. And there are some that are they're the 6-week challenge of B2B, right? Like, yeah. Oh, dude, sign up with our franchise, you're gonna be fucking killing it, blah, 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 blah. And that's not the case. It's like any other small business. You know, these are
bro,
these
what
are
you think about.
Yeah.
What do you think about that questionnaire CrossFit sent out?
Oh, I saw that.
About franchising.
I haven't seen it, but here's the deal. First off, anyone has a licensed deal with CrossFit. It's not like CrossFit can't force you to become a franchise. All they would do is they would not renew. You know, hey, you know, effective on this date, affiliations will not be renewed. NC Fit's about to do this.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm having Jason on for the podcast next week. I got to make sure he's okay with me saying that. But NC Fit is not going to renew their license models with those gyms. I want to say there was 80 of them when he launched that in 2020. Oof. I don't know how many there are now, but all it is that the parent company doesn't, the licensor doesn't renew it. And now the licensee can no longer use the mark. But then right. They could roll out, hey, we're not doing license anymore, but for $20,000 or for a higher dollar amount, we are going to do a franchise and it's going to be this, 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 and this. And you got to follow it this way. I don't think they're going to do that though, because where is the flagship gym? Where's the gym that they're looking at? Like, this gym runs at exactly how we think all the CrossFits can do it. I don't know if that one exists.
I feel like they could have done that back in the day when the Reeboks came out.
Yeah, maybe.
Like that that would have probably been a better time.
Yeah. So anyway, I think it's smart for them to ask. They're sending out a survey and everyone's like freaking out about it. I'm like, it's just a survey. Like it trust me, yeah. This kind of thing, you're not turning this Titanic in a year. Like this is gonna be something that's gonna take a very long time. And because they need that revenue stream coming in as well. So they're not going to, when they cut it, they're gonna have the next thing lined up ready to go. They'll probably have already sold franchises or do both in parallel. Hey, you can have the license model, $3,000, or you can have our franchise model. And our franchise model comes with this. And just run both until one of them, and then just hedge your bets.
I bet they'll start, because they don't have a lot of leverage right now. They could just start levering up a lot of the gyms and basically be like, oh, it's going to go from 3 to 4 to 5,000 to 6,000. And then it's like go from 6 to 10,000 or 6 to 15,000. You're like, okay, that's not as big of a jump. Right. So I feel like they'll start to bring it up a little bit and make it less appealing just to affiliate if they do decide to do that.
And I don't want to speak for him, but I think Jason could attest to this. You know, when he opened up the NC Fit partnership, which is a license model, he truly in his heart of heart, just like I did when I was doing Urbans, I wanted to offer as much business support as I can, knowing I can't force them to follow it, but I can offer as much, but it's expensive to offer business support. Like if you're going to have even 500 gyms, on your license model and you're going to offer legit good business support, someone can call up and be like, hey, here's my scenario. What should I do? That is extremely expensive. You know, I ran the numbers and I came up with 12,000 and I knew that was only sustainable for probably about 50 to 75 licenses at that number. It was actually going to have to go up at that point, probably closer to 24. And so it just, you know, anyway, but we'll see what happens with CrossFit. But speaking of which, you've transitioned out of, and it was South Bay, correct?
Yeah, CrossFit South Bay.
CrossFit South Bay. You have sold, you've since exited that. Walk me through that. And, you know, because I know once your content took off, it was apparent, I think, to everyone, obviously, like, well, Forrest owns it, but it's not like the dude's coaching fucking 10 classes a day. He's obviously pursuing this other path with his personal brand and his content. Walk me through kind of the time, like how you came to that decision.
Well, I mean, you know how it is. Like during COVID, I got onto social media simply just so I could have another stream of revenue, just so I wasn't just tied down to the gym. And then as the content started to take off, I was like, oh shit, you can make actually a decent amount of money online. And you don't have to pay rent. You don't have to pay employees. You don't have to pay insurance and taxes and fucking equipment breaking and all these other things, right? All these costs on top of that. And I was like, yo, I could just do this. But you know, it's been 14 years and bro, I just got tired. I got tired of the game, man. Like I got tired of people, you know, joining and quitting. I got tired of like hustling hard to get like 10 new members a month. I got tired of like managing coaches, having coaches move. I got tired of that whole shit, that whole deal. And for a long time, I was good with it. But you know, in the last I would say the last year, I started to get real tired of it, man. And I didn't want to get to the point where I was just fucking burned out and done, and then wanted to sell. So I still had some gas in my tank. So I was like, yo, I need to sell now. I need to do this now. So that way I give myself enough of a runway. If it takes 6 months, fine. If it takes a year, fine. No big deal. And I just wanted to make sure I got my ducks in a row and I had a good enough offer. So what I did was I just, back in July, I actually mentioned it to my coaches. I just at a coaches meeting, I was just like, guys, I can't do this forever. I want to sell the gym. I'm going to offer it to you guys first. And if none of you guys want to take it on, I
Did you have
will
any
offer
inkling
it.
as to like one of my coaches has got cash or got money or they might be interested or a couple of them might go in on it? Did you have any, did you for, foresee that at all? Or were you just like,
A
I'm literally just
little
throwing this up there?
bit. I mean, I thought that, there'd be like three or four of them that were like interested, right? That could like pull it together, right? And like maybe they get, funding from one of the members, and like, we're in a pretty affluent area, so that works out pretty well. And I have some members that have been with me for like, over 10 years. So, I thought that there would probably be a couple. And there was actually three parties involved that were interested, that were kind of like pursuing it. So then come October, closed on October 15th, and I no longer own a gym.
So, and you don't have to share the number if you don't want, but like, how did that work out? Everyone always hears an exit in the micro gym space, but when you say exit, we say sell, and these things are really glamorous. And you get a check, but like right now, I'm doing a deal or I'm helping someone try to find every dollar we can squeeze out of the business right now. And realistically, this person who might have owned this business for, let's say, I think 7 years, might be able, if they're lucky, might be able to walk away with 82,000, maybe. And unfortunately, that's just the tail of the tape. And how did it turn out for you? Was there a lot of haggling on the number? Was it more than you expected, less than you expected? Just kind of whatever you feel like sharing from that.
It was definitely enough, I mean, I don't want to give the exact number, but it was definitely enough. I threw out a number to everybody, and it wasn't crazy. It wasn't crazy. It wasn't too far off. And I think what it came down to was really just finding the people that were going to move the gym forward enough, move the gym forward so that I wouldn't have to come back in like a year and have that bitch be closed down. So I threw out a number. We haggled. I mean, with the three parties involved, we haggled a little bit, but ultimately, like we came, the buyers that signed, we came to a pretty good deal. And luckily I had three parties interested, right? If there's only one, you lose a lot of leverage. So having multiple parties interested makes the price kind of sticky. So that's where I got really lucky with that. And I didn't even have to offer it to the members. I didn't even have
Did
to like make it public.
you sell it to one person or did you sell it to multiple?
One person. I
Okay.
mean,
Well,
well,
so
technically it's a husband and a wife, but
yeah.
yeah.
And they were not members.
No, so she yes, they were. So one was
Okay.
the husband was the member. He's a fire chief. And then the wife had actually worked the front desk for me for probably like 7 years.
Cool.
So yeah, just kind of as like a fun thing for her to do.
I'm curious on the lease side. Was your how many years left did you have left on your lease?
So I just re-signed my lease in June
And
for
the
five
landlord
years.
allowed you to sign it to them?
Yeah, so what he did was canceled my lease out and then
Sure.
signed a new lease over to them with the exact same terms.
Very good. That's
And
very good of.
then when we re-signed in June, I actually asked him to put a clause in there. If I do sell, this is what will happen.
Very cool. It's very
And yeah.
smart of you. Good forward thinking, man. Good. Well, congrats, dude.
Yeah. You always have to have those options. I think a lot of gym owners get into this whole game and thinking that I'll just run the gym forever. I love it. And I did the same thing. And it was just like, oh, you have to go into it with an exit. You have to go into this whole deal with an idea of how you're going to get out of it.
Yeah. It's to think that you'll do anything forever. like forever is kind of crazy. Like, you don't think you're going to get really interested or passionate about something else ever. Like,
right.
I don't know. Yeah. I think it's always right. You know, hope for the best, but plan for these things. That's why I think so many gyms, their operating agreements, like partnership agreements, are just complete dog shit because it has none of the nasty stuff in there.
Yeah. That don't get me started on that.
Yeah. I know. Right. We've been down that road on the first episode.
Yeah, dude. And that's why I also told my coaches, I'm like, hey, you guys, if you guys want to go in on this, I would advise not doing a partnership. Do not do a partnership. If you don't have experience doing a partnership, do not do one. And you have to put in so many different clauses in there. If somebody gets arrested, if they get convicted of a felony, if somebody gets cancer, if somebody cheats on his wife and then basically gets addicted to blow, who fucking knows, dude? There's all these different things that you have to put into this, right?
Yeah.
Because like, I've seen you probably have seen it too. So many gym partnerships just go fucking sideways because something crazy happened. You know, what if one of the partners sleeps with one of the members?
Yeah.
You know, what happens then? There's a lot of bullshit, dude. There's a lot of stuff. And then like people don't take that into consideration because it's like, oh, it won't happen. Whatever. But it does. It does happen.
So walk me through last time we got together, and that second time you came on the podcast, we were talking about, you know, your content had taken off. You now had this new brand that people were following, and you know, edutainment or however you want to call it. Right. You made like, there was these entertaining videos, but they also had, you also had this educational component towards it. That was obviously fitness based. That's your level. That's where you're an SME at. So it's actually in your market. Well, it's in the Bay Area. I got a client who just hired a trainer to work at his small business, and we're not paying him a lot, who has 220,000 followers.
Oof.
This individual has not figured out how to monetize it to the tune where he is going to work for the gym of my clients. And it's a great gym.
That's crazy.
It's a great business.
That dude could sell t-shirts.
I have personal friends here in Charlotte that have very large followings, larger than you and me combined, and they have never been able to figure out a monetization play that works. And I believe there is an influencer or an online brand that falls that leans one way or too heavy into maybe following a trend or following or being a mouthpiece for whatever it is, whether it's politics or this or that, and they never can turn it into, oh, people see value in me outside of entertainment or, you know, so talk to me about how you know, really creating a monetization, you know, vehicle out of a following. Cause it's not as easy as everyone thinks. I think it's easier than some people make it, but walk me through that for you.
Yeah. So, I mean, dude, that's the thing with like social media. It's wild because you have two different aspects of it. You have one aspect where you're like, I need to get followers. Followers don't necessarily mean you're going to get dollars out of that. It won't necessarily convert to dollars. If I were, you know, doing like showing my ass or doing something like super sexy, and then it's like, oh, but I also do fitness. And it's like, they don't care about that. That audience that followed me don't care about that, right? They're like, show me more, Dancing Monkey. And it's like, no, I want you to buy my fitness program. They're like, we don't look at you as a fitness person. Right. We just look at you as somebody that entertains me. But that's why you have to be very careful what you get known for on social media. That's why it's like, for me, I talk about mushrooms every once in a while. I don't make any money off of that. But those videos just get major, major like traction. But I have to be very careful about how often I do that, because it's not like I'm selling mushrooms. Right. If I were selling mushrooms, that would make more sense. But I'm not. So that's why I think you just got to be careful what you get known for. That's a big piece of it. One. And then number two, I think you have to pivot once in a while. So I pivoted, and it's like, I got famous on Instagram and TikTok by doing a lot of like lip syncing little skits, like funny little skits. But I was always trying to pepper in some of that educational piece of it, because I knew that I had to monetize this and people had to take me somewhat seriously. I couldn't just be this funny guy. And so I've switched my content up a little bit, and it's not easy. It's not easy to switch your content up and like start to experiment with like new forms of content that actually make you more money, but get less engagement, get less followers. And it's just, you know, you have to, I think, balance those things out. And then monetizing is a whole different story. It's just like, what do you even want to do? Some people don't want to coach people, right? Some people don't want to coach. Some people want to push like products or do like affiliate codes or whatever the fuck it is. And there's a lot of different ways to monetize, but you have to sell somehow. And it can sound, it's really easy to sound super sleazy on social media when you start selling stuff, where things start to become a commercial. So you have to be very subtle about those things. And the way that I found the best way to sell is to not really push it at all and mention it once in a while, but provide a lot of free, free information. And like, cause like, no matter how much free information you provide people, they're still going to need help. I mean, you provide a shit ton of free information and people still need help connecting the dots. Right. So that's where I think the majority of the monetization comes in play. But like for somebody with 220,000 followers, you know, and they're a fitness person, it just depends on what you got famous for. If you got famous for having like a good looking butt, then it's going to, you're going to have to start doing some like glute programs or like something. And it's going to take a little while for you to like modify that, that story and that content to like get people to start taking you seriously.
Okay, but real quick, based on what I'm talking about here with Forrest, I do want to let you know, I take on one to two of these projects per year, but anyone who's looking to develop a personal brand, they want to create an online consulting, coaching, freelancing. I don't care if it's copywriting, if it's creative, if it's business consulting, life, whatever you think you are a subject matter expert in. When you believe I know something, I have a framework for this thing and I know it better than most, and I have an interesting way to say it or deliver the content, or I'm not sure how to deliver the content, shoot me a DM on Instagram at WTF Gym Talk. I do generally two personal branding projects per year. And that's because they're really big projects. It takes a lot to take someone's what they know and figure out what is it you know, how are we going to talk about it, and then how are we going to monetize it. But if that's something you're interested in, a lot of people, I've shared my story. When I started WTF in 2015, I grew to 1,000 followers. I made $100,000 that year. When I got to 2,000 followers, I made $200,000 that year. And at 3,000 followers, I hit $300,000 in revenue, and it's only grown since then. If this is something you are looking to do and you believe you have the chops to do it, shoot me a DM on Instagram at WTF Gym Talk, and I'd love to see what you've got going on and if I can help. All right, back to the conversation with Forrest.
Yeah, I've spoken with people in the realm where they are an online influencer. Their fitness is the thing. It's either, you know, they've got an online training program, they use Trainerize, they use an app, they do online coaching kind of scenario. And they're, you know, they're pretty much like, okay, so I've now accepted, as long as I'm hitting the record button and I'm uploading and it's me and I'm on there and I'm doing my thing, I'm dance monkey dance, it works. Mm-hmm. The second I deviate from it, they're like, you can see numbers like violently drop it. And one gentleman made a comment about something that was more political, and which is a big no-no, because like a gym, you know, if a coach makes one off comment, you'll get a lot of complaints. Not too many people are going to submit the cancellation, but with an app, like again, and because it's digital and remote, you might have people paying anywhere from, I don't know, $50 a month to maybe $100, $200, $300. I don't know what the ceiling is on the online training, but it's easy enough for people to just cancel. And he's like, I'll see people drop from my service. I mean, because I've got hundreds and hundreds of them, and we'll lose 80 because I messed up and made this one video in which I definitely said something that triggered this one group. Mm-hmm. But man, like, but you know, am I going to be a slave to like only saying what's not going to upset anybody when the global market, when you're online, you have no idea who your real avatar is.
Nope. No. So that happened, that, you know, that happened to me. And like, I don't talk anything political, right? I make a point not to talk anything political. And I think there's enough of that on social media to where I don't really need to chime in with my fucking bullshit too. You know, I'll deal with my friends and stuff, but social media is a little different. However, with mine, it was more of this, like, so I also got known for a few things. If we're like, I, you know, I've suffered from an eating disorder. I've gained a bunch of weight. I've lost a bunch of weight. I'm very sympathetic to people with binge eating disorders. There are a few very like obese people on TikTok that I've stitched with, like stitch a video with, where, you know, I'm supporting them. And you get a lot of these people that are like, no, they're just fat and lazy. And it's, they're just, they don't, you know, it's just like, they're just a fat slob. And it's like, no, bro, there's like a lot more to binge eating than just being fat and lazy, right? There's a lot more to it. There's like, there's a lot of mental health issues with that. Then there was this girl that, you know, she calls herself like a plus size traveler and she's big. She did this post where she was saying that, you know, because I'm plus size, I deserve a free extra seat on airplanes because the seats are too small. And that
She needs a seatbelt extender, one of those?
No. She, more than that, she needs two seats.
Oh, two seats. Got
it. Two seats. And then she's like, and I think I should get that for free. And the other passengers on this plane need to subsidize that free seat. And this is, I'm starting this petition for other plus size people. And I was like, no, yo, there's a simple solution to this. This is, that's some bullshit, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And she's also has videos where it's like, you know, she uses the little like scooter, the little scooter.
The rascal
like,
scooter?
Yeah, the little, like the one when you go to like a grocery store.
Yeah. Yep.
Because she gets tired, right? And I was like, no, look. Look, that's just entitlement at this point. That's just, you're not asking for help. You're looking for handouts and you're using this like fatness, this obesity as like your excuse and your way to get sympathy. I was like, fuck no. So I did a video on that and people were like, how could you, blah, blah, blah. That's being ableist. I'm like, is she fucking disabled? No, she's traveling around the world. She's a travel blogger. And I was like,
what did you see? What was the fallout from that? Was it followers? Was it money? What happened?
It was followers, but it was like, it was a net positive, but I'd like lose like 2,000 followers, but gain like 5.
Yeah.
Right. So, but at those types of things, it's like, no, those 2,000 that I lost were probably 2,000 I wanted to lose anyway.
Sure.
And I knew that was going to happen. It was very polarizing. And it was just what's going to happen. But if you're just saying shit just to say shit where it's like, yay Biden or yay Trump or whatever the fuck and whatever it is, well, there's really no right or wrong. If people are just like, yes or no, right? That's not going to equate to more dollars.
Yeah.
Sometimes you do have to be polarizing and sometimes you just need to shut the fuck up about some stuff and let other people talk about it.
I always love, you're the only other dude on the internet that uses the word cunt openly. Like mm-hmm. in a fun way, but I can't anymore. I got two strikes. I got 2 strikes in one day.
The Australian guy, Adam.
Oh no! Oh, I know who you're talking about. The cunties or cunnies.
Yeah.
Cunnies or whatever. Cunnies. Yeah. No. That guy. I mean, he's done it perfectly, and Instagram has not punished him. I got 2 strikes in one day.
Yeah, dude.
I. So I was like, God damn it! But every time I hear you use it, I'm like, keep it going, buddy. Keep it going.
Yeah.
It's my favorite word, and I never use it on women. I use it on dudes and objects and things I had a coffee one day. I was like, this is the cuntiest coffee I've ever had in my life. Like, it was just fucking disgusting, right? Like,
yeah, that's the thing, though, is if you say it with an Australian accent, it's totally fine.
That's the same
thing with American accent. Yeah.
I was teaching my daughter the other day. Like, I said retarded. I'm like, that's a bad word. Don't say retarded unless you say with a Boston accent, retarded. Now you can say it all you want.
Because
you say
fine.
Retarded, it's okay.
It's hilarious. It's
hysterical. Fucking hysterical.
Yeah. And that's the weird thing about social media. You do have to pick and choose your words wisely. It takes a lot of work to build up a social media following. It takes one word to like destroy it.
It does. And that's where like I've always been very interested in like the infrastructure of followers, aka let's call it just audience, and the resilience of that audience to things that don't deal with the core thing that brings value. So if Forrest brings fitness, health, nutrition, value consistently, but he says things that are fringe at the, you know, they're not what he's about, but he says things that can be fringe and upsetting. The majority of a market in any industry is going to accept valleys because the peak is worth it. There's a book called written on this called Moment of or Power of Moments by Chip and Dan Heath. Most consumers, Disney's the perfect example. Taking your kids to Disney is a dog shit experience. Tickets are expensive. Get kids on an airplane. That's expensive and horrible. Wait at the airport, blah, blah, blah. Your hotel room's not ready. It's 99 degrees out there. A soda is $13, but watching your daughter fucking lose her mind when she sees Minnie Mouse, worth every valley for that one peak. So because, you know, if you're an influencer, if you can just provide high enough peaks, I believe there's a level of resiliency where your money ultimately won't get fucked with as long as you continue to provide that peak. And no valley, no matter what the valleys you do, you say this, you do that, you have 10,000 followers follow. Because at the end of the day, out of like, if we did a percentage of your customers or your customers divided by followership, it's like 0.00 whatever, 1%. So yep. At the end of the day, you could probably go to 1,000 followers, and if all 1,000 of them still kept paying you or whatever your customer base is, you'd be fucking fine.
You're right. Right. Exactly. Like that's, I didn't lose a single paying follower. Let's put it that way. Yeah. Right. So it's like, and it doesn't really matter for the most part. It's like, since I switched my content up, I'm doing a little bit more educational. You know, I've steadily over the last 2 months, probably net lost 2,000 followers, you know, net. So you gain some, you lose some, and that's fucking fine. It's whatever. It's like I'm back into a different phase of my content, but that's not because I said anything inflammatory. It's just because some people joined for like the funny videos, and I don't really do those anymore, yeah. Right? So it's just you have to, I think, with this content game, you can't really look at follows, likes, comments, and shares and have that be like religion. You just have to have it be like, you know, it's one metric. But are your dollars going up every month?
Oh, yeah.
And that's really ultimately what it comes down to.
And you're like the king of this. You know this better than anybody. You know, the various like what things mean and what they don't mean. And like I was showing this, I was trying to explain to somebody how things don't exactly work. So in the past 90 days, if I go to my Instagram, I'll go 6 million accounts reached. And I we crested, I think, so 10,000 followers. But like in a 90-day period, there was 6 million accounts that I dinged, reach, whatever. Like, I think, like, and that's so funny because I have podcast sponsors. A lot of them in podcast analytics are dog shit. And people are always like, what is this getting? Whatever. I'm like, bro, you could get a babillion fucking impressions or reach or something on here. It doesn't necessarily correlate to dollar amounts.
Like, does not.
It does not. It's that scene from Wolf of Wall Street. It's a fugazi. It's a foozy. It's upsy. It's downsy.
Yeah.
It's
a wazzy. It's a woozy.
Yeah. Exactly. McConaughey. It's just, it means nothing. Like, and nobody, if someone knew this means that, like four quarters is $1, we'd all follow. We'd all know it. It would be out there in the ether by now, but we don't. Like, no one has a fucking clue what truly makes someone. Is it 19 touch points before someone converts, or 900, or 9? What is? Nobody knows.
Nobody fucking knows. And like that, they just came out with something recently where it's like the majority of the impressions that you get on like Facebook ads are bots.
Yeah.
So fucking whatever. Yeah. Like, you could get 1,000 impressions, but if you know 900 of those are bots, and only 100 true impressions, then it's like, and you don't know that number. You have no idea what that number is, right? Yeah. So you just have to kind of keep plugging away until something hits, until something works. And you just use those as like somewhat of a guidance, but they're not a map and compass at all. It's like, it's very much just kind of like, well, let's fucking see what works. You know, something could get a billion views and not convert to dollars, but something could get 1,000 views and convert to a shit ton of revenue.
No, 100%. I'm curious on this for you. So walk me through the monetization place. So for you, online training, what SaaS product are you using to deliver this?
So I use Trainerize.
Trainerize. Great. Trainerize.
Yeah, super easy.
And people, so what are the options that people can, cause I know there's people listening to this that are going to, they have a dream or a pipe dream of wanting to do something like what you've done. Walk me through the service offerings, cost, all that.
So I'm a little fucked up on that because I kind of started off over offering a lot of stuff and under charging, right? So I started off at $150 a month, and I was doing nutrition.
You sound like a good entrepreneur that starts anything, right?
Yeah. And like, you know, at the time I was just experimenting with it. I didn't really know what I was doing, you know, but you know, in the first year I was offering at $150. And so I was offering nutrition coaching, programming, and kind of mindset habit forming stuff, which is all kind of tied together. Cause you get a nutrition plan and like a training program, it doesn't mean dick, because if you just can't figure out how to implement it, it doesn't really matter. Right. So
are these like PDFs, like one to many, like templates, or are these like phone calls with people?
So I do an initial phone call and I ask them a lot of questions, and then I make like the programs up, and then through Trainerize, I'm talking to them constantly.
Yeah.
So for example, this one lady that I have, I don't even have her on a program. We're working on habits. So it's like, you got to get up, you get up at, you know, 6:30 every day. I want you to get up at 6 a.m. every day, change out of your pajamas, go walk around the block, come back, put on like your work face and start work. Right. Saturday and Sunday, you're going to schedule 2 to 3 hours of just cleaning your house, getting your office ready, going grocery shopping, doing that stuff, and getting you set for next week. And in a month, she dropped 10 pounds. Right. I did zero nutrition coaching, all habit coaching. And, so it was just like, I'm not even programming workouts for her yet. And it's just like, I think some of these people need a lot of different deliveries, and it's like, they could have a training program or a nutrition program, but it doesn't really matter. I don't fucking do it. So, I basically started off at $150. Right. And then realized that it was way too much work, and I'm DMing with them constantly in Trainerize. They're sending me videos of them working out sometimes, and I'll send them videos back being like, no, fix this. They'll send me pictures of their food, and I'll tell them about food swaps, whatever. And then I was really like, man, that's a lot of work. So I bumped it up to 200, then to 250, then to 300, then to 350, and I'm currently sitting at 350, and I'll most likely going to bump it up to 500 and then have a lower cost offering.
And when you, every time you bump, are you doing a price correction on everyone and bringing them up to speed? Or are we just new people coming in?
Depends. So the people that are on the lower end of things, I will bump them up slightly. So I won't bring them all the way up. I'll bring them up like halfway. And most of them are fine with that, 'cause they see the value in it already. And all the every time when I'm like, I'm going to bump you up, but I'm only gonna bump you up halfway, and they're like, oh yeah, that's fine. I'm like, fuck, I should have bumped them up all the way. Same thing goes when I, like, you know, I set, but the first time I sold at 350 a month, they were like, yeah, sure, let's do that. I was like, fuck, I should just go to 500. Fuck, man.
Isn't it funny? If I asked you before you started this about the gym, and you and me were talking to another gym owner, I guarantee you would have given them very clear instructions. Start higher. You don't undervalue your thing, because you have confidence as the gym owner.
I know.
We step into this realm, we have a little bit of imposter syndrome, and we've never actually, like, I came up with this pricing. I looked at what some of the other players are doing, but I came up with this. Is it going to work? You don't know till you throw it. Like, I don't blame people when they're like, man, I started off too low. Like, no, you started off with a hypothesis. Your hypothesis was people will pay for this. Guess what? You were right. Now create a new experiment. Will people pay for this? And you're just testing new hypotheses over and over and over again. And eventually there is a ceiling. It doesn't go up and to the right forever. And, you know, but it takes a little while. And you have to, and also then, and as you do that, you have to realize, okay, as the price goes up, there does need to probably be a perceived value increase as well. But how do I do that at scale as a company of one? Right. Mm-hmm. How, what's the most efficient way for me to bring? So have you brought in, are you using anyone right now? VAs, an assistant, anybody?
Nah, man. Simple. Just me.
You're Paul Jarvis, company of one. I love it. I fucking love
just
it.
Just one.
That's it.
And I'll try to keep it like that for as long as possible.
I agree. I agree. The only thing I hired a full-time creative director last year. But I've got the team in the Philippines that does all the video editing.
I might have to hit you up on that.
Dude, I just had the founder of the company that I use on the podcast, Video Husky. I was like client number whatever 10 for them, and they've blown up. They're awesome. I mean, I've got a project manager, I have a head editor, I have a thumbnail editor, and then I get to have strategy sessions with them anytime I want to talk about whatever the new project is and how I want it to look, and it's fucking awesome. And it's
fun. Dude, I might need that.
Yeah,
I'm doing it all myself.
The team, they're good, dude. And they're like, real good.
Yo, the editing takes forever.
It does. And you and me, I like it so, because I did that whole fucking grind. I mean, I still, like, over here is like, So like my entire workflow and everything is still, I mean, that's where I fucking, you know, I would sit there for hours and edit.
Yeah.
And now it's, I just, they know the cadence. I've got a brand guide for them that my creative director created and we just upload and boop. And also like, have you fucked with like Munch? And the thing with yours, you can't use those long format to short format editors because yours is so, so wild. It's so crazy cuts and stuff like that. And it's you actually need a human doing it. You're not able to AI that yet.
No, I've tried it. It does not work. It requires more work.
Yeah. But now that I would say, you know, that's kind of for you. That's like, you think about what in a week with Forrest, what does Forrest spend the most of his time doing? If it's like client work, cool. That pays the bills. Editing doesn't pay the bills. Mm-hmm. Editing is an auxiliary function. So it's like that would probably be one of the first things I would outsource.
100%, dude. Yeah.
Have you read that book, Company of One?
No.
Dude,
I'll get on Amazon right now.
Dude, this was what changed my life when I owned the gym, and the gym was going well. I had bought the building and I was thinking of the replication model. We were going on the franchise route, and then I read this and I was like, dude, I don't want a ton of employees anymore. I want to be able to mic drop anytime I want and just be done. That's why I don't do contracts. I've had I've got business mentors and like, you got to go with contracts for your consulting. I'm like, nope, not doing it. Cause I don't want to have to owe anyone my fucking work. If I want to just fucking boot, I'm done. I just want to be boom, done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like my lawyer could drop me anytime because I don't pay him on a monthly return. Like I don't pay him on a contract. I just pay him when I need him. And if he's like, hey, I'm not taking any work, I'm taking 6 weeks in the fucking Bahamas. I'm like, oh,
well, okay, cool.
He's not available, you know?
Yeah, cool. I'll deal with it.
Yeah. So now let's talk with the short-term rentals and things like that. I saw that with the domes and all that. How did you get down that path?
It's always been something that I've wanted to do on the side. So I've always wanted to, like, you know, before 2020, I was actually looking at getting a short-term rental, like an Airbnb, right? Just one, I'd manage it, you know, make some money. And I live in LA, so I live in Hermosa Beach, right? So it's just like, I look around here, you know, if you look on Zillow for Hermosa Beach, the average selling price of a house is $2 million. It's a small town, but the average price, I mean, there's some for $6, $7 million around here. And I can't afford that. And it's like, you have to, it's just everything fucking California right now is getting crazy, super expensive. You know, I can't even like buy a normal gun. I got to go buy like some old ass generation gun because, you know, it's like because of all these fucking laws. So I'm like, yo, dude, I'm done. I've lived in California my whole life. Ever since 2020, California's gotten a little wild. Crazy. A little crazy. There's a big homeless issue here. There's a big crime issue here. So I'm like, I've always wanted to like kind of get out into like the wilderness. And so I was like, where could I go? And, you know, I was looking at Pacific Northwest and then I was looking at Southern Utah. Like I love Southern Utah, but I was also like, man, Southern Utah is hot. It's just hot as fuck. And I, you know, half the year it's great. Half the year it's hot. My buddy, his wife is on that show, Criminal Minds. He has a big house out in Southern Utah. So I'm like, I can just go out there whenever with him. So I was like, I'll go to Pacific Northwest. I actually ended up dating a girl who's in the Pacific Northwest as well. So it works out. She owns a gym up in Bainbridge Island up in Washington. But cool. The places I'm looking at are still like a couple hours away from her. But so I looked at some national parks. Olympic National Park seemed like the best. And I wanted to find some place rural that I could put domes on. And the whole idea of like a one short-term rental doesn't really make that much money. It just doesn't, right? But if you have a property that has five short-term rentals, then it makes real good money. It's just economies of scale, right? Because like the first one will pay for everything. And then the other four is all profit.
Yeah, it's like owning a duplex back in the day or a quadplex,
right.
Essentially. Yeah.
Yeah. It's basically what I'm doing is making like a five unit property
a compound. Out in.
Yes.
I hate saying the word compound because then everyone thinks of fucking, what's the one where Koresh went fucking crazy and killed.
Like some sort of weird cult. Like So, but that's basically what it's going to be. It's pretty much going to be a compound. Yeah. Waco.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah. You're going to make like your own Waco. And just you're just gonna have all these, just be banging random women, guys' wives. Like, no, it's what the Lord wants.
It's mine. It's mine. Oh, you don't like it? Banished.
You're banished.
Yeah. No, so that's basically what I was gonna do. I'd live out of you know, I'd live out of like an ADU.
Yeah.
And rent out everything else. That's and then cool, just man. Manage that, convert a garage into a just a big barn gym and kind of like a event center kind of deal. Most of them have these big ass barns, man. Like, you know, they're like a couple of them. Some will have two barns that are 4,000 square feet.
Where's the POC? Where the proof of concept? Like, are there other, like, have you seen nationally other places that do this?
Mm-hmm. So there's a few in Texas, which are weird. Like one's actually outside of Waco. And I'm like, how is this place crushing? They have six, they're like Swedish style cabins. And he kind of took this piece of shit land that had this really murky pond, expanded the pond. It cost him, I think, like $2.5 million to do it. But now private equity came in and valued it at like $6 million. And the place is pulling in $1 million a year off of five units.
Have you reached out, like, been like, and just started trying to, like, network with these people to figure out, like, so you don't make the same mistakes that they did?
Yeah, yeah. And there's a dome, one that has three domes in Gatlinburg, Tennessee. There's a couple of places in Washington that have done that. And then there's a guy on you know, the social medias and YouTube. His name's Kai Andrews, and he kind of coined the term land hacking, which is like basically buy the house, put up domes, rent out the domes, and here's how you do it. Or domes or container homes or tiny home, whatever. Yurts, whatever the fuck it is. Whatever you want to do, right? There's a lot of zoning issues that you have to go through. There's a lot of hoops to jump through, but for me, I'm like, fucking fine. More hoops, the better.
So I went through this phase, you know, when Airbnb first came out, I thought it was great. And then as the past 2 years, I've traveled more than past 3 years, more than I ever have. And, like 2 years ago, I just wrote off Airbnbs. I feel like in the cities, like, cause I'm traveling generally to cities, I'm way better off at the fucking Westin or Seasons 100%. Or something like that. In the cities, the Airbnb is just, it's a dog shit. I mean, I don't mind the smell of weed. I dabble often, and I've been in Airbnbs where the smell of weed is so strong in there. I'm like, I have to leave. I can't sleep here. Go to a hotel, but I'm not a nature guy. I don't do the outdoors. My fiance, her, like, they like to go hiking. I'm like, if I wanted to go be in the woods, I wouldn't have worked as hard as I did. I'd go be homeless, but we can go, we'll go walk through the woods. And all you fucking crazy white people do our white people shit. Get our fucking LL beans on and shit, whatever.
I love it.
But that's where all the good Airbnbs are. Or like in the outside where they can create these really cool experiences. You can't create a cool experience in downtown Chicago better than fucking Four Seasons did. Like,
right. For the same price of a stay.
Yeah.
Like they end up being the same fucking price.
Yeah.
And you got to pull the sheets off and do the dishes and shit. Fuck that, dude.
Yeah.
You know, honestly, I hate Airbnb too. I had a really bad experience out in Joshua Tree a couple weeks ago that I'm actually going to do a post on. Where my stay was $109. I got charged over $500 for one night.
Why?
I know.
What'd they say?
So it was basically just because the cleaning fees, and I had gone from doing a yurt to a like bungalow, but the guy didn't tell me that the cleaning fees were going to be like $250. And I was like, what, dude?
Yeah.
You didn't tell me that. And I should have looked on the site, and I booked directly with him to help him save the 15% from, and I went back and forth with him, and I was like, look, dude, I take some responsibility for this, but I'm like, that's pretty deceptive. So I'm going to do a full post on that. But yeah, I hate Airbnb as well. But the big piece of Airbnb's, like, are the fucking owners, the hosts. The hosts are not, most of them are not business people. They're not hospitality people. They're just somebody that just wants to, they have some money, they buy a house, they want to get a return on it. They are not business. They're not running them like businesses.
Yeah.
Right.
And there's no real oversight. It's very similar to CrossFit. It's kind of similar to a license
model. It's like, oh, this would be cool.
Yeah.
This sounds fun to do. And that's basically what's happening. Right. So the owners are the ones that are like ruining it. And, you know, the whole game is like, oh, let me just search on Airbnb and let me find the cheapest one. Oh, this is $80 a night, but it's a $250 a night cleaning fee. You're like, dude, just fucking say that. Just say that it's $300 a night or whatever. Yeah.
It's crazy. Especially, Yeah, I think again when you're it's just supply and demand out in like wilderness remote areas, there's obviously not a fucking JW down the street, right? So like the Airbnbs they're way better off, but they have to be better. But in the city it does, because it's also sometimes like I was in Chicago for the marathon, you couldn't get a hotel, like we booked, I couldn't get a hotel room. I had to book at Airbnb. It was probably one of the better Airbnb experiences, but like still, I would have much rather had a concierge that I could have called down and been like, hey, we want a steakhouse. Can you find us something? Blah, 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 and have them take care of it, right? Like send me up this to the room. There's like certain amenities that are nice that come with the, I like being able to go down to the hotel bar and meet the creatures that are at the hotel bar. It's one of my favorite fucking parts, is just schmoozing with random hotel bar people. And it just, yeah. So
So that's what I actually plan on doing. I actually plan on being the concierge. I
Yeah.
actually plan on like I
See.
eventually I'll like put on things like a pickleball court. I have a unique stay. I'll be honest about the rates. I'm not gonna like be like, oh, it's $80 a night, but $250 cleaning. I'll just make it one rate across the board. I'll have like pizza ovens. I'll have like movie nights. I'll have like a full gym for people to use. I'll have like time for people to like couples to socialize. I'll have like suggested hikes. I'll have like suggested restaurants. We'll do like basically farm to table stuff. So that's like the stuff that I find fun, right? So
Yeah.
I would do all of that stuff instead of being like, oh, well, you're staying here. Good luck, and clean the sheets before you
You'd
leave.
exceed the expectation, which, I had another a couple several years ago, shitty Airbnb experience going off to Asheville. Talk to the guy about, hey, we're real excited to go see this one brewery. And he's like, yeah, the brewery's cool. I'm like, whatever. And like we get there and it was just this mundane, it was what I expected. I kept telling myself, if I owned this motherfucker, I would have left me and my girlfriend at the time a nice note. Hey, enjoy your whatever. I would have gone and got a 4-pack of beer from that brewery, put it in the fridge, and been like, hey, you're gonna go check them out. This is our favorite beer. We hope you enjoy it. This one's on us. I mean, just little things that when I open that, if you can just exceed the expectations of somebody, it's incredible. It's like, have you ever seen that TED talk on reasonable hospitality? It's about a restaurant called 11 Madison Park in New York City. And the origin story is that the owner of the restaurant, regular 4-star restaurant, like we're talking white crisp linen sheets, it's one of the most famous restaurants in New York. But he heard a couple people at a table say, man, we've gone to all these incredible restaurants. The only thing we didn't have on our New York City visit, we didn't get a New York City hot dog from a vendor. And they all laughed. He ran out to the street, went to a vendor, bought hot dogs, brought it into the chef, gave it to the chef, begged him to serve this in this 4-star restaurant. And the chef, cut it up, warmed it up, had like a little thing of, made the presentation look like 4-star. And then he brought it out to their table with, they never spoke to him. He just overheard this. And then he said, so you don't regret your culinary experience in New York City? A New York City hot dog. And they went fucking nuts. Oh, and they also wrote for like the 4 largest food blogs in the world at the time. And the place just went insane after that, you
Dude,
know?
and fucking how would that cost him? $6 and like 5 minutes
Literally.
of his time,
Yeah.
right? And it doesn't take much. That's the best part about this. Same thing with CrossFit gym, same thing with anything. Most people are doing the bare fucking minimum, right? And if you just did a little bit more, you're the top 1%. That's all it takes,
Yeah.
right? But nobody wants to fucking do that. Nobody wants to do that. And I'm fine with that because I will do that.
Sure.
Good fun. Good. Awesome.
It is. And it's just one of those things too. It's like, there's no reason to talk about a service. Like when someone's like, how's the Airbnb? That was good. There's really, they're like, that same thing with gym owners. They're like, well, my members are going to talk about how awesome. Like, no, they're not. Like, they expect good coaching, a good workout, and a nice community. So if you have those things, they will not speak about that externally. However, like I did this with my gym. The gym's Instagram account only followed members and local businesses that we fucked with. So if we saw a member, something cool happened to them in their life, we'd get them like an RAK, a random act of kindness. So like chick passed the bar. We'd have like a bottle of champagne or whatever ready for her when she got there. Congratulations on passing the bar. She had no idea. She didn't tell us. We just creeped on her Instagram and saw it, whatever. They will talk about that because it's not what they paid for. It's not what they expected. And it's a real simple equation.
Yes, exactly. Exactly, dude. And it's like, and then they will talk about that. Look what my gym did, right? And then she'll go talk to that about her to her friends, being like, my gym did this. People will join your gym because of that, not because of like she goes and says, oh, we did this brutal workout today. You want to come? people will be like, no, dude, I don't fucking want to do that. But if they're like, oh, you're Jim Cares?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I want to go there. I want to experience that. Because people go through life where nobody gives a fuck about them, right? So if you show a little bit of like caring attention and just interest, people are like, yo, this is the best. This is the best.
How soon are you to going out there? You got to sell your place in Hermosa. Like, what's the plan?
No, bro, I rent. So
okay, like, so you're free. Yeah. You can bounce anytime.
Yeah, I'm the freest I've been in a long, long time.
So what's the plan? When's launch date?
So I got to find a place first. All the places out there are crazy expensive right now. So I'm looking probably in spring. I don't want to move out there in the middle of winter. It's wet. It's rainy right now, and I just want to have the first. Yeah, Well, I'm going to go USDA loan.
Oh.
Because it's all rural out there.
Yeah, that's cool.
So I'll go USDA 4%.
Yeah.
They match. I'll go USDA. All the places I'm looking at qualify for that. I just want them to come down a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, hopefully they will. They actually are starting to come down in the rural areas pretty decent. Like, there are a couple places that were listed for like 750 that are now like 690. And and they're dropping even more. So
do you have anyone out there looking for you creative financing, like owner, like people who do some level of owner financing where they'll be the second position instead of the bank to get the price down, stuff like that?
Yeah. Yeah. I have a couple people looking for me, but I'm also like researching all that stuff. Cause a lot of that stuff is brand new to me. I'm also like signed up in a course, you know, I bought a course, I think, and that these guys are helping me out, like with all the financing options and like doing all the, it's a lot, dude. It's not just like buying a place and going and living in it. It's because I have to talk to the county about planning, what I plan to do, like dealing with septic fucking tanks and water wells and setbacks. And
because you gotta bring utilities to the location, right?
So no, most of the places will have houses. All the places have houses. I'm not going to buy a raw piece of land, but if I want to do the domes, I have to plan it to where the land is buildable. So it's not just like on the side of some fucking mountain where I can't put a septic tank.
Sure.
Right. So I have to make sure that it's buildable. And I also have to make sure there's enough room to put a second septic with like the leach field and all that bullshit. There's a lot of technicalities with it, man.
There's a lot of technicalities, and it's obviously doesn't sound inexpensive at all. How do you, with the business currently, how do you think about like that scaling and that, like, you know, have you figured out kind of, I think this is what my ceiling is going to be on my earning potential. Like, and if so, where's the gap? Like, how much further do you have to go to get to that? You know, as a company you can scale the unscalable to a certain point, but there will be an earning gap on that.
Yeah, there will. And I won't really know that until I hit it. Right. Because depending on what I offer, I think, and that's the same thing with gyms, right? A lot of gym owners will operate, you know, just by themselves until they're like, I got to hire somebody. They hire that one person and then they max themselves out. And then they're like, I got to hire another person and so forth. So I will just max myself out. And then I'll worry about that when I actually hit that point. Yeah. But things like editors, though, I could probably get down with that right now.
Yeah.
But like, it depends. So like, if you have a digital offering, if you have a course, you just have to create that course, edit it, put it up, market it a little bit, revamp the website, have your funnel, capture your leads, and push the sale, right? That, once that's in place, that's relatively automated. You have to go in and update it once in a while. You have to kind of keep an online community, like in a Discord or something, but that scales pretty easily. One-on-one stuff doesn't. So it depends on what my mix is going to be, and I'm kind of figuring that out now. So it's only been about a month since I sold the business, and I'm helping them transition right now too. So that's actually taking up a decent chunk of time. So, you know, I think I'll be focusing on that for the next like few months.
Yeah.
Like scaling up.
Yeah.
Getting a plan together for that.
I will say, like, when I kind of figured out the hours, how many hours a week, or I'm sorry, well, week per month I wanted to work, that's really when MGU needed to, when I switched the model to it. Like I did that original big paid in full $6,000, whatever. Then I went to $50 a month and, you know, add two new courses a month. You know, $50 is a number that any most successful gym owners, if you're even making one of those videos is interesting to them, course, like information wise, it's worth the $50 type scenario.
For sure.
You know, and, but it's one of those things too, like, is what that you have to keep feeding that monster, right? You got to keep feeding that thing with information. But I always told myself, like, I was gonna just start putting it all on YouTube for free anyway. So like, I can't see myself. I mean, there will be a day, just like nothing's forever. There will be a day I don't want to hit record and make another fucking video and talk about business to small business owners. There will be a day that'll happen. It's like, but until then, fuck, good for them. For 50, they get all this for 50 bucks. Good for me. I make whatever. We have X amount of people enrolled in it. Like, it's great.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing though. You got to squeeze that fruit until there's like no more juice out of it. And then you're like, okay, well,
on to the next.
Kind of ran his course.
Yeah, then we roll up the Jim Real Estate Company. Like you always move on to something else, right? Like you always go on to the next thing, you know?
Yeah.
You come up with something that's generally adjacent. Sometimes it's way off in left field compared to what you're doing now, but you find something that's adjacent that has a higher income potential and it's really interesting to you. And you fuck it. You do that, you know?
Yeah. And then you just take those skills and move them forward, right? And that's all I'm doing now. I'm just buying, I'm like bought that course. Fixing my skills up, moving forward. I actually might buy another course. Have you heard of a dude named John Goodman? He does this thing called online trainer mentorship, I think.
No, I was thinking John Goodman from fucking Roseanne.
Or oh, yeah.
That, no, I would buy his dude. Course, though. Whatever course he's selling, yeah. I would buy it. But
yeah. Yeah. Maybe I fucked his name up. I don't know. But anyway, online trainer.
Could be right. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, so, online trainer.
Okay.
Was it trainer mentorship? I think that's what he calls it.
Got it.
But it seems pretty good. I know a couple people that are in it and they're like, he helped them scale up. But these are dudes with like, you know, 7,000-8,000 followers. And they're like, they're pulling in like 15,000 to 18,000 a month off of that.
I always transparent with it. WTF, I mean, like, fuck, I remember like we just hit 10,000 followers. I remember when I had, you know, when I had 3,000 followers, I was able to do, I did 300,000 that year. And I remember
that's
being
insane,
like,
dude,
I remember being like, this is incredible. Like, why would I ever, like, I don't care if I grow one more follower, right? Like, I don't give a fuck.
Yeah. And, you don't care anymore.
No. And like, that's the thing is like, I've got that one of those tickers. I had it at Urban. We had it there and it like shows your followers and it ramps up. So people would like literally see it. Be like, what is that? I'm like, oh, if you follow us, it'll flip over. They're like, really? And they would literally, I forget the name, it's called Smirl, S-M-I-I-R-L. And they would follow us right there at the gym at the front desk. And they'd be like, oh, that's so cool. And then walk away. Right.
Yeah.
And then, so I still have it. I have it synced up with WTF now. And it's like, I was like, oh my God. Yeah, we did. I've never even thought about, I'd ever see 10,000. Like, but who gives a fuck?
Cause yeah, at a certain point, you don't care.
You don't care. You don't give it. Like, cause it, again, there's, I monetize this percentage of it. The rest of it is just,
it's like fluff.
It's fluff. It's
like there. Yeah.
And you know, it's so interesting when people are growing something like this. And you and me probably felt privy to this. And when we started, we thought that was the most important thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like I know people with, you know, 4,000 followers that will probably do 500,000. But it's like they've niched in. They're like the niche of the niche of the niche of this thing. And it's, you know, you don't, you know. That's like how I think the Jim Real Estate Company is going to be. I think that might have 3,000 followers in it in the next 10 years. And it you know, the earning potential on it, cause it's a neat, it's so fucking, you know, there's nothing else like it. The one thing I want to ask you, I want to be thoughtful of your time. I know we ran over. How do you think, cause your content, everything I've seen is very, your delivery is one, it's incredibly unique. Cause you've got very much just like comedian style to you. You're very, very entertaining and funny. How do you think about delivering? Because most of your content is very general, right? Like we'd say you're probably like GPP is probably your like your average person, your beginner to fitness type scenario.
Yeah.
Do you ever think so, like, yeah, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. Just go ahead. Finish. Sorry.
I was saying like that's such a wide gap, right? There's a lot of those people new to fitness. Mm-hmm. Is there a sector of new to fitness? But like, again, like niching in further to a certain demographic that interests you at all.
Yeah. So I've started to do that a little bit more and I do a lot of general stuff. And I think what I try to do is like, I don't know, for every 5 posts, I try to do like 1 to 2 that are kind of really niched down that are just like very specific. Right. So, you know, I'll talk about endurance athletes. I'll talk about and like something very endure, like just like running in general, right? Or like most people don't really look at running as something like to improve like cardiovascular health. Most of them are just like, I want to do it to lose weight. So I kind of veer away from just the weight loss stuff. I will start to get a little bit more into some CrossFit stuff. And like, I'll be targeting people who have either aged out of CrossFit or just got burnt out on CrossFit. And I'll be targeting some of those people, transitioning some people from CrossFit over to like a bodybuilding style workout or like a hybrid style workout. Some of that stuff doesn't really quite hit as well because it is so niche down. But yeah, I will be doing a lot more niche stuff pretty soon.
Very cool.
And yeah, because it's like what interests me. I just basically do whatever interests me.
Yeah, and that's the only thing you can't do, because you don't become a company of one to have thousands of different bosses you've never met telling you what to make content on.
Yeah, dude. I don't like, I'll make stuff on like, you know, form and technique and things like that. But like for the most part, I don't really, I just do stuff that I'm interested in for that day, for that week, whatever. You know, a lot of it's nutrition based, but it's just, it's, you know how it is with content, man. It's like not easy to like come up with new stuff or fun ways to talk about macros or whatever the fuck it is. So, and it's like without getting too sciencey on things, you got to keep things very like elementary on there. Otherwise people just fucking check out. So
you also take people on your journeys. I remember watching when you were first getting into running, just relatively, I think in the past year, you went on a boys trip. And you're like, holy fuck, I got to start running, right?
Yeah.
And I was watching that because I was training for the, I just started getting running this past year for that marathon. And I was watching it. I was like, oh yeah, fuck, brother. Like, I know that feeling. I know that feeling.
Right? Yeah. A lot of people like that running journey of mine, you know, and I kind of tweaked my hips. So I kind of switched to biking for right now, but I'm going to get right back into running, you know, and like trying to find different shoes that help. Because the same problems that I have, I think, you know, most people will have, you know, you get a dip in like, dip in motivation, you get a little injured here and there because you pushed it a little too hard, and you know those are normal fucking things.
Yeah, it is. And running is the most complicated biomechanical body weight exercise in it possible to do. There is nothing more biomechanically complicated than running with proper form, and it's the only thing that we'll do with horrendous form for thousands and thousands of reps in a singular workout. Like you would never round back deadlift 7,000 times, but you will take 7,000 steps in a fucking, in a 60 minute run.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, you'll do it. Like, you'll do it back to back to back to back. Right.
Yeah.
Like you wouldn't deadlift 7,000 times, especially wearing shitty fucking shoes, old worn out shoes. Right. But we do that with running. We do it with running, and it's like, it's just like one of those things that people like kind of discount. But so yeah, I'm kind of doing that, you know, I'm doing that. And then I'm probably going to start doing a little bit more of the Airbnb stuff as well. Some more of the business stuff. And I just kind of, you know, mix it up right now. Yeah. I'm kind of in that transitionary phase with my content where I am exploring different formats, long form, short form, medium form, you know, punchy stuff. And it just, you know how it is. You have to change it up. Otherwise people get bored. You get bored. You know, it's like something that keeps me interested still. I'm not really interested in doing a lot of the, like the lip syncing stuff anymore, you know? So
yeah,
it's time to move on to something else.
I remember you had your, like the emo Fallout Boy, like you shut the entire gym is closed down and you got the lights on, and like, it was so well done. It was so fucking good.
Those are still fun to do. So I'll still do some of that skit style stuff for sure. Because that's always fun to do. And then like being in a new location, I'll be able to film a ton of new stuff. I mean, Olympic National Park is like, it's so pretty.
Have you collabed with other people? Like you saw like there, you know, Ben Patrick probably traveled over and like fucking made videos of the top 50 fucking YouTubers over time that helped him. And Marcus Philly, similar thing. Like, have you found guys that are like at your level, even the better, the ones that are slightly below, because they'll always say yes. They'll always say yes to you if you have 10,000 more followers, and just start doing collab and start siphoning audiences and co-sharing audiences.
I haven't done a lot of that yet. You know, I've thought about doing some of that. And like in the early days of TikTok, I made a bunch of friends who are now huge on TikTok. And, you know, I've kept in touch with them. So I probably will. And like being in LA, there's a lot. So I probably will take advantage of that. And I just, you know, I haven't because social media was secondary to the gym. And right now I'm transitioning now to make that more primary. And I never looked at myself as like an influencer, right? I never looked at it as like, I'm a social media influencer. So I'd never really thought about doing the typical collabs and the fucking, you know, Instagram lives and all that stuff. You know, I've toyed around with it a little bit, but I haven't really done it a whole lot. But I'm going to. One of my friends, she does this thing where she gets stoned and like cooks a bunch of food. And she's, you know, a couple blocks away. And we were supposed to do something, but she's been traveling
What's that? What's her account? I want to follow that right now.
Dope Kitchen.
Oh, what a great handle. Good for her.
Yeah. Dude. Yeah, she's fucking awesome. She's one of my buddies. She's a couple blocks away, but like we're homies.
I love that. Oh my God, I'd love to see you on an episode of Dope Kitchen. Holy shit. That's so good. Yeah.
We'll do something.
Yeah.
But collabs are great. You know,
if you do, please let me know. But I appreciate it. I'm sorry. I took so much more extra of your time, but thanks for coming on. I'm so glad we got to reconnect. It's good to see you. And, if I make it out, if I do another West trip this year, I'll make sure to include, if you're still in Hermosa, I'll make sure to include it in a stop and stop by and see you and Shantae.
Yeah, man. Yeah. That'd be awesome, dude. Great having me on. Thank you.
Oh, always, buddy. Always. For everyone listening, get on your gram, get on your talk and go see at I Know Forrest, Forrest. My dude's there. He's very funny. He has good information. And anyone who's looking, who's just inspirationally wanting to create an account, I just take the 20 minutes it'll take you with your thumb to go to this first fucking go. Just take him all the way back to the beginning. And it's my favorite thing to do with an influencer. Like I go back to when they weren't an influencer and look at the and just slowly scroll up. Everyone scrolls down.
I do that too.
Scroll up and just watch that evolution. I think it's many people can see themselves in you, and you can inspire people who have an idea, but they're like, I'm afraid my mom's gonna make fun of me, or my older brother's gonna make, or my friends are gonna make fun of me, or whatever.
Everyone's gonna make fun of you until you make it.
Yeah.
Until you make it, then they're gonna be like, oh, bro, I knew you could do it this whole time. I knew it, dude. Fuck, awesome, bro. And it's like, no, dude, you're fucking making fun of me. Like we always talk about climbing Cringe Mountain. You got to climb Cringe Mountain if you want to make it.
Yeah. Yep. Awesome, brother. All right, listen, buddy. Thank you very much, everybody. Thank you for listening. We'll talk with you guys soon.